Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Drex Radio Show continues. I'm John Lobertini, KGO 810.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day.
I feel so cooped up in this place.
Okay, but remember, serpentine!
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 Could you repeat that last part?
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
All right, now we're going to go back to the Reagan years, if you can remember that, the Reagan era. And I say good evening to my next guest. It's Dwayne Betts, and he is the author of Bastards of the Reagan Era. And Dwayne, thank you very much for joining me tonight on KGO.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Okay, so this is, boy, you have an incredible life story. And it goes, it starts with crime at the age of 16. And then you end up in Yale and, you know, working with the White House, this, that, and the other. How would you explain your life?
I probably will argue that some of it was random. And I was just really fortunate after having making sort of tragic and terrible decisions to be able to get the opportunity, one, to sort of make amends, but two, to go to college and prove myself as an intellectual and get an opportunity to work with different people and get an opportunity to end up, frankly, at law school and, you know, practicing law in the system in which I was once, like, confined and trapped in.
And so many people were in that era. When we talk about the bastards of the Reagan era, am I correct in when I assume this, that we're talking about the war on drugs?
Right. Well, so the book, the new collection of poems, is essentially about the war on drugs. I think one of the challenges is that because I went to prison myself in 1996 and I was 16 years old, people think that I'm trying to talk about my circumstance and my experience as being a product of the Reagan era. But what I think about is that sort of my experience is about the bastards of that era in terms of the young people who are essentially not just frequently abandoned by family members because of addiction or because of crime and violence, but also sort of abandoned by the large community. So I consider myself not necessarily a direct product of the 80s, because I was born in 1980, right, but I consider myself a product of that generation that followed.
Sure. And at 16, so that everybody knows, you were sentenced as an adult because you carjacked and some guy with a pistol. So that got you 8 years. Is that correct?
I served 8.5 and I was sentenced to 9.
Wow. That's heavy. And why? And you were sentenced as an adult because of the gun? I mean, you didn't use the gun in the commission of the crime, did you?
I mean, I had it, and I tapped on the guy's window, and I showed him the gun, and then he got out of the car. I threw the gun into the passenger seat. I got in the car. My friend got in the car, and we drove off. But I think it's just important to note, really, that, you know, I was tried as an adult, not because they thought that prison was the best place for me to be. I was tried as an adult basically because that was the practice that they had at the time. If you had a carjacking, if you had a robbery, if you had a rape or a murder, you were automatically tried as an adult. And I'm not making an argument that I shouldn't have been punished. Of course, I mean, I pled guilty to my crime, but I am making an argument that my judge told me I'm under no illusion that sending you to prison will help. And so if my judge understood that, why send me to prison? And that's sort of the argument that I've been making since I've been home. Why do we send so many young people to prison if
right,
we know that it won't help them?
I mean, you ended up becoming a better person, so to speak, but it wasn't because of going to jail, per se. And weren't you a good student when the crime was committed?
Yeah, I essentially had enough credits to graduate from high school, and so I ended up graduating from high school before I was sentenced
and
then going to prison.
And talk about, like, the evening and the decisions you made that led up to the crime itself.
It's funny. I mean, it was 20 years ago now, so sometimes I think I honestly think I relive a moment at least, you know, a dozen or so times a year, and not just because I'm interviewed or because I'm somewhere speaking about the book, but just because you can't escape some of those decisions that you can't change. You can't escape some of those regrets. But to it was really mundane, and I hate to say it that way, and I wish that I could say it and say that it was a whole lot of gravity to it, and there was a whole lot of thought that went into it, and I considered what might happen after I did this, but frankly, I was just in a situation where it was the only time in my life I've had a gun. I just happened to be at a friend's house who had a friend come over, maybe it was a cousin come over, whose name I don't even know, and it was somebody that was older there, and next thing you know, we talk about doing crazy things. And the idea is planted in my head, and then I'm in a car headed to, basically, I'm in a car driving myself to prison.
Well, I like the way you explain the story, because it does have a happenstance nature to it. And like you said yourself, it wasn't well thought out. And what the world at large needs to remember is that you were 16, and we all found ourselves in dumb situations as a kid and making a dumb mistake. Yours just carried this huge sentence with it, and something that, like you alluded to, you have to live with the rest of your life. It's a part of your past now.
Right. And you know, in some ways, I think it's both the sentence, but also I think I'm able to say it now because I have a bachelor's degree, I have a master's degree, and I'm about to have a law degree. If I just worked at McDonald's, or if I just worked at Target, or if I was just a trash man, I think people wouldn't really give me the opportunity to say that I just made a mistake and that I'm trying to work past that mistake. I think I would have a much more difficult time not only getting employment, but being looked at with respect from the rest of my peers and the rest of the people around me. And I'm sort of like in a rare space in which I have this burden of having, you know, did this thing, but I'm also respected by a lot of people because they've been able to look at my mind and look at some other things I've done.
Well, you made a conscious decision while you were in jail that you were going to put your head in the books and continue to be the honor student that you were before you committed the crime. And so, therefore, a lot of, you know, you tell me, inmates, convicts, they find themselves becoming career criminals while they learn the art of crime while they're doing their time. But you went the other way. So you reformed yourself. I mean, so what is the answer when we think about, let's face it, I mean, here in America, and everybody knows it, there's a disproportionate amount of blacks versus whites or any other race that are locked up because, and then drug crimes more than anybody else. And then we lock up more people in these United States than any other Western country. So what is the answer?
I mean, I think there's a couple of answers. One is we really have to think about what gets criminalized and who gets criminalized. And then the second question, really the second answer is even once somebody commits a crime and it's a decision made to punish them for that crime, we have to ask ourselves, when is that punishment end? You know, I've had jobs myself. I went up for jobs and I didn't get jobs because I was convicted of a felony. And the thing that balanced that out for me was the fact that I was always in school. And so I was always doing well in school. If I would have been a mediocre student, then again, I wouldn't have got the sort of the accolades and the opportunities that I've gotten. So I think it's important to note that, one, you have the fact that you go to prison or you go to jail or you even have an arrest record. And then, two, you realize that having that thing has consequences that expand further out than just the fact that you made a mistake or you committed a crime or you were found guilty of committing a crime.
Forever and ever. And by the way, in your story, not to interrupt because I got to go to break here, but even that damn, have you ever been convicted of a crime, even though you did the time, as simple, and by the way, you almost went to Howard, am I right? But they rejected you because of that, am I correct?
Right, which is, you know, the irony of all ironies. I'm a student at Yale Law School, but I couldn't get a full tuition scholarship to Howard because I have a felon, or three felons.
Wow. You know, I want to talk about the hard truths here when we take a break and we come back. And the realities, they're pretty overwhelming for African-Americans in this country, and perhaps you could address that. And your book, Bastards of the Reagan Era, is full of poetry. I'd like you to recite one of your poems. And then I want to talk about the new drug czar, who was on 60 Minutes on Sunday night and said, look, 40 years of this, I'm done. It has been a disaster. And I want to ask if you agree. 808-0810 is the number to the Drex Radio Show on KGO810. Before we continue, let's take a look at traffic. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGOradio.com. And I am having a chat with Dwayne Betts, and his book is Bastards of the Reagan Era. Actually, it's a collection of poetry. And by the way, Dwayne, I was wondering if you might share one of your poems that you think might be timely with us at this point in time in our day.
I, I'll read a shorter one because I think it is sort of appropriate for the moment, both okay. And a complicated question about prison and everything else.
That's right.
In the street, Elegy with a rest in peace shirt turning into the wind. In the street, the boys play a game they call throwback. It is football. Every man for himself as he weaves under the wires above Mississippi Avenue. The sneakers swinging above his stooping body are like machetes. Fresh Jordans, Air Force Ones, and Chuck Taylors singing death songs when the wind blows hard enough. Touchdowns are as rare as angels, and when the boy turns his body, the RP shirt slants against the wind, and there's a moment when he is not weighed down by gravity, when he owns the moment before he crashes into the other boy's waiting arms. And they all look like a dozen mannequins controlled by the spinning sneaker strings of the dead boys above them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite prophetic.
Thanks a lot. You may know Dwayne Betts, by the way, also for his memoir from 2009 called A Question of Freedom. It won the NAACP Image Award.
And this is a life story from crime to Yale. So we were discussing on the other side, and I know that you are a parent yourself now. So, and by the way, as I mentioned, if you saw 60 Minutes this past weekend, on Sunday, we have a new drug czar, Michael Botticelli, and he says addiction is a brain disease and the 40-year war on drugs is over under his reign. It's a failed disaster, as I'm sure you would attest to. So what conversation are you having with your son or sons, and what conversation should parents be having?
So my children right now are really, really young. So I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old. And the one thing I would say is I would be remiss to act as if the war on drugs would solve all of our problems with incarceration. Even if we had no war on drugs, I mean, I committed a carjacking, and I pled guilty to the carjacking, and I was still ended up in prison. So I think one of the things we have to do is have a different kind of conversation about what mercy looks like and what punishment looks like and how do those two things interact to keep the community safe. Now, what I do for my sons, I think, is what everybody would mean. And like basic sentence they try to do for their children. So I just try to provide my sons with opportunities and make sure that certain kind of opportunities just aren't available to them. So they aren't in spaces where guns are available. They aren't in spaces where crime is high. They aren't in spaces where, you know, my children go to private schools because the school system in New Haven is just not that good. And so we forced to send our children to private school. And so I think, you know, what I do and what I think other parents should do and other parents try to do is make sure their children had opportunities to make the discussions and the conversations so far from crime and violence and drugs that not going to prison is not the goal. You know, it's not even a part of the conversation. My children already talk about going to college. They spend some of their days playing at Yale Law School, and they feel like they're part of this space. And that's something that as a kid I just didn't have. And it didn't have to be Yale Law School, but it should have been some college. It should have been some space in my community where people were coming, you know, to me as a high school kid who was relatively bright, who was smart, who could have made it to college, and talking to me as if that was the expectation for me and making me understand how that was possible. And we really just didn't have it when I came up in high school. If your parents went to college, you had those conversations. If your parents didn't go to college, you just didn't have those conversations.
Yeah,
I know that your mother always supported you. So when you went through this process as being charged with this crime, this carjacking at 16, did you fall away from her? Did she abandon you or did she stick with you?
No. My mom has always been my strongest supporter. And I think one of the things that also gets lost in this is how much, and this is why talking about prison is complicated anyway, because I definitely don't think I should have went to prison for that long. But I'm also aware. Right, but I'm also aware of the great pain that my crime caused my mom and caused my family because, you know, despite the fact that I have all kinds of reasons why I should have had a different sentence, I still held a gun. I still had to try to explain that to my mom. And the inability, my inability to explain that caused my mom profound sadness because she didn't raise me to pull guns out on people. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the other, you know, complicated ideas is how do you deal with crime and violence in the community and deal with it in a way in which honors the fact that people have been made victims, but also honors the fact that we want a community that's whole, not just a community of people who are made victims that are whole, but a community of people who, like, also will want the victimizer who gets the opportunity to be made whole and in doing that make the community whole. Because frequently we think that, you know, justice is just for the victim, but I think if justice is for the society, then we can't just, like, cheer and be happy when somebody gets sent to a terrible place like prison and they're 16 years old and they're likely to be abused or beaten and act as if that's a win for society.
Right. And then that scarlet letter sticks you with you for the rest of your life. And I don't think that's fair. So we need to look beyond the guilty and the prisoner terms and look, I love one of the things that you say when you talk about core values that parents should instill. And that is surround them like a circle of elephants. I think it's powerful.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think if, you know, I think about one of the things that I didn't have, and people frequently say, well, what was going on in your family? And I say, well, my mom was great, but the one thing I didn't have is a true circle of support. And I think a lot of young people don't have that, and they don't have it because sometimes it just doesn't exist in their families, but it also really doesn't exist in the community. And I look at what my sons have, and I'm just amazed, really, at the amount and the level of support that my sons have from my peers and, you know, from my family. And I think that's something that's frequently missing, and we don't think about what we could do as a community to make sure that more people have that.
Interesting. So each child feels more loved and support, and also maybe in a way accountable to other people and adults, friends, family.
My entire career, you know, all of this started because I started a book club for kids called Young Men Read. In terms of my, you know, publishing life as a memoirist, it started because I had a book club for kids called Young Men Read, and it was for 6 to 11 year olds. I had about 10 of those, and then it was for 12 to 18 year olds, and I had about 15 kids. And they came in a bookstore I worked in, and I bought books for them, and then we all read the books together. And subsequently, a reporter from the Washington Post came in, and they ended up doing a story about me, and it was on the front page of the Washington Post. And so I'm a huge believer in the fact that when you kind of create those spaces, people see you creating those spaces, and that becomes, at least for me, it became the foundation for who I was in the community, and it also became the thing that made a publisher think that my story was worth telling.
It is, and it's a fantastic story. Reginald Dwayne Betts, thank you very much for joining us this evening. We have all the information at kgoradio.com. Bastards of the Reagan Era is the name of the book.
Thank you for your writing. Yes. It's a real gift to the world.
And have a great holiday. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. You too do the same.
Thank you. All right.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.